Blog Talk Radio.
Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
I'm your host, Jackie Wayans, and I tell you, we have a show in store for you. I can tell by all of the challenges that we have had to just bring it for you tonight, and it's entitled From the Fire to Faith to Fashion. And, you know, we talk a lot on the show about the fact that God says he will never leave us or forsake us, and that he will be with us through the fire and through the flood. And there are many things that we go through in life and many things that we face, and we feel that we are just not going to make it through. Everyone has a story. But I tell you tonight that this story, Linda Rowe Thomas's story, is definitely what we would call a page-turner. Who is she? She is an American fashion designer. She's known for her haute couture evening wear with flattering silhouettes and elegantly glamorous aesthetic, and yet very contemporary, very appealing. If you don't know her work, I suggest that you get on her website and YouTube and seek her out. Her clients include Grammy winners, Olympians, national recording artists, and her peers are top designers like Ralph Lauren and many others. But she also is an author and a keynote speaker. And as you will hear through the show tonight, Linda survived a house fire that left her with facial scarring and without fingers on her left hand. Yet she has gone on to have excellent impeccable stitching capabilities, sewing garments still by hand. And so in to hear how God's amazing grace on a life can do wonderful work. When we come back, we're going to get right into our conversation with fashion designer Linda Rowe Thomas.
Thank you.
Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And that was the famous Amazing Grace, but it was taken from the soundtrack of the movie Freedom with Cuba Gooding Jr. And I thought it was just so fitting because Linda's life is one that really talks about true freedom. Even when you feel limited in your physical realm, true freedom, we will find, really comes from someplace else. Linda, thank you so much for being with us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Oh, no, I am looking forward to it. I'm thankful to you and Bridgepoint Media for connecting this. Shout out to Lady LaDonna and her wonderful team. And she really called me and she said, you've got to have Linda Rowe Thomas on your show, and just told me a little bit about you. And I said, you know what, don't tell me too much. I want to save it for the actual book. So, Linda, tell me a bit about your life. We know from the introduction that you experienced an earthquake in your life of a home fire.
Well, actually, I was only two, so I'd say fortunately, I don't even recall the accident itself, but you know, I think the fact that I don't remember it has a lot to do with who I am as well. Because my mother was so instrumental in making me the person that I am, because she had the opportunity to either say you can't or you can, and she fostered me from my earliest memory. Is there's nothing you can't do, anything is possible. I came from a minister. My dad was a minister, and I always say my mother should have been, because she was so strong in her faith and it was so evident in her life and the way she reared us up. And that's who is so, has been so important in who I am.
That's a beautiful thing, to be grounded in that and to have a parent who's going to give you the strength. So you mentioned siblings. How many siblings do you have?
There were six of us. There are four now. I actually lost a sister in the fire. She was 6 years old, and she passed from the smoke inhalation.
I am so sorry about that. And so your mother and father, you know, really had to rebuild their lives all together. And in the midst of this, they're nurturing you. We know just by, you know, going to school and just going through life, there are definitely challenges that we all face, and you had some challenges to face. So how did you learn to build your self-esteem and to push through the limitations that you had physically, and how people responded to you around you in your world?
Well, first, there was a lot of being in the hospital, first of all, and just to get back to the being able to go back to life as, you know, normal, so to speak. So, I mean, there were times that I would spend summers or months, you know, in the hospital. But as far as my self-esteem, again, I just have to go back to my mother refusing to let me be down on myself. But, of course, you know, growing up as a kid, and I always talk about this, especially going into kindergarten, and all of a sudden there's all these people that are saying you're different and making notice of the fact that I'm different, when my family always treated me like there was nothing. It was almost like it was like a shock fact, because, you know, being home with the family, I was never treated any different. I was never told I was any different. And then you go into kindergarten and then it's like, oh my God, you know, every single day someone focusing on the fact that you're not, you don't look like them. So, but again, I don't think I ever would have made it without my family grounding, putting that core in me that you can be anything, you're no different than anyone else, just to look past what the world may say, regardless of how it feels. You got to look past it and find your inner strength.
So let's step back a little bit. You know, the hospital, of course, they're just looking at things medically and physically. Did they mm-hmm. predict any limitations on your life when they were speaking to your parents in the early days? Did they kind of put any limitations out there on you to say she will never be able to do this or that?
Oh, absolutely. My mother was told that I would probably not have a good quality of life because of the fact that, you know, I had lost my fingers on my left hand and, you know, partial on my right hand. And so, but again, she said, well, you don't know the God I serve. And she put me in that direction from that moment on that, you know, you don't put limitations on what you can or you cannot do. And I just shared this story with to students. One of the things that she did after you come out of the hospital, they want you to learn how to get your mobility back and those type things. She wanted to purchase an organ, and I was like, why would you do that? I can't play the organ because I don't have any fingers. And she looked me in the face, and she said, very matter of fact, don't you ever tell me what you cannot do. And she bought the organ, and yes, I learned to play all the little trendy On Top of Old Smokey and Mary Had a Little Lamb. And so it was things like that from the very beginning. There was can't is not an option. That's what she always told me. Can't is not an option, and never set a limitation on yourself.
Wow, that's amazing. I wish we had the era of video back then so that we could have captured those moments. Wonderful, and kudos to having a mom like that. You know, I always ask, especially when my guests come from a home that was faith-based, at what point in your life, you know, when you're raised in it, when you're immersed in it, you kind of feel like you always have this connection with God. But when did a relationship with the Lord really become keen for you, that independent of your mother, independent of your father, you know, being in the ministry, when did it become your lifeline, so to speak?
That would definitely be going off to college because, you know, I had been around all these people that had known me since sixth grade and, I mean, since kindergarten. I was 6 years old. And so, you know, they'd known me, and I developed all these great relationships that didn't have to explain who I was. And then to go off to college, and it was a pretty big university. And so here I am with tens of thousands of students that have never seen me before, and so it was almost like setting the clock back and having to start all over, and that's when I was really able into all the things that she had taught me and that my dad had taught me, and have that faith and have to call on God to get me through those times when I had to pretend to be as strong as I appeared on the outside. Yeah, you know, the outside, I always say that for years, if you saw me on the outside, oh my gosh, she's so strong. But I was just a marshmallow on the inside. And that's when I really started to develop that strength and that inner peace, that inner self-esteem. And it shined through from the inside then.
You know what? That is a powerful statement, and I want you to really take us back to a moment in time that kind of describes that moment where on the outside, people looking at you are saying, oh, my gosh, she's so strong. And on the inside, you feel like this marshmallow. Can you think of an example you can share with us?
I keep going back to that very first day. The first days were always really difficult. Even going into the first day in corporate America, because the minute I walk into a room, I'm going to be underestimated, and you can almost see it on a person's face. They are automatically expecting less of me. So I have to walk in the door proving myself. And so that requires a much higher level of confidence from the very beginning, because you're immediately put on this level without even given the being given the opportunity.
I agree with you because we're going to come back in a little bit to the fashion industry in particular because, you know, anyone can tell you that's a challenge on any given day, much more when you're coming
absolutely.
Fit the type. But I guess I'm keenly interested in this period because it's a transition period for, I think, many as you go from the safety net of your hometown, of your home, of your church, mm-hmm. of what's familiar to you, and then you step on a college campus and you're away from all of that and you have to find yourself. And there's that resolve to be strong and to put your best face out there and to be as strong as you can. But inside, we know all of our vulnerabilities and what we're really going through. And so that is really, that sentence is really haunting me because I know it's true for so many. And what was it like, if you could paint a picture for us as you walked into a classroom or even dealing with a professor? Because a lot of times our professors have limitations, they preconceived notions of what you can and cannot do. So how did you, you know, if you can give us an incident or talk specifically about an area where you were clearly underestimated and you had to though being a marshmallow on the inside, you still had to find that resolve on the outside to prove who you really are.
Well, what I will say, I can definitely, I was an athlete, and that's actually how I went to college. I was recruited to run 400 meters. And so, of course, and you know, I anchored the relays. And so, of course, the minute I walk onto that track field, you know, I see it like, what is she doing here? You know, I could see that. And especially going into the competition on a college level, I'm already scared. I'm already terrified. Am I going to be able to live up to the standards? Am I going to be as good as everyone else? And then on top of that, everyone looking at me for being different, for not having the appearance that they have. So those moments, like that, really, those are when I really, really, really learned where my faith was and how strong my faith was because I started to pray. And the things that I would hear my mom and dad say or I'd see my mom do, that's when I started to emulate those things on my own. And that is when I really started to develop that strength. And I guess it was there all along, but I started to develop it because I was forced to use it. Versus having my parents to fall back on. Yes.
Application is everything. You know, we can hear it, we can be around it, but until it sinks in and you're able to apply it for yourself into your real life, that's when it becomes absolutely real. And I could imagine, you know, being on that track and field, and I'm just amazed at all the things, all the challenges that you've taken on in your life, even up until that point. There, those of us who we walk onto that moment in time and we feel all of our insecurities, and a lot of times it's in our head. But for you, this was a case where you know it's not in your head. They are looking at you. Yes, they have summed up in themselves, what is she doing here, you know? And those are the times that I'm sure you anchored down and you said, Lord, I need you. I need your strength. Yes. I can't get through this without you, right? But when we come back, we're going to hear more about those tough moments and how God brought Linda through.
Not a second or another minute, not an hour or another day, but at this moment my arms outstretched, Lord, I need you to make a way as you have always done before. Through a window or an open door, I stretch my hand to thee. Come rescue me. I need you right away. I need you. Thank you. is yet searching the world for more. You're the truest friend I have indeed. You're my best friend, all I ever need. Of doing things on my own, the tests and trials that come to make me strong, the feelings of guilt, hurt, shame, and defeat, the ways that feed upon me.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
That was I Need You Now, originally done by Smokey Norfolk. And as many of you know, that is a song that I put on my CD, My Strength, My Song, available on SoundCloud for free. You can just download it as I share with you my struggles and my journey through word and song, and that was one of the covers that I chose as well. So, Linda, we have in common a love and an affection for that song, I Need You Now.
Yes.
You know, you sound so strong. Your mom sounds so wonderful, and you're doing all these things way before beyond what doctors thought were possible, maybe even with your mom challenging you, maybe even beyond what she thought was possible for you. And it all looks wonderful, but I wonder for you, was there ever a breaking point where you thought, you know what, this is too hard, it's impossible, it's just not going to work, I think I just want to give up?
I don't know if I've ever allowed myself, honestly, to go that far. Of course, there are moments where, you know, I'll have where my breakdowns, I call them. And I feel like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do now, God. I can't take it anymore. But it's almost like in the same breath of me thinking it or even attempting to say it, I know that that's not going to happen, that I'm not going to give up. So it passes before it can even fester. And I guess I can attribute that to my faith, because God just doesn't allow me to go there. And I don't know what that is, but I can honestly say that I've never been to the point where I can't go anymore.
So talk to us about, what does a breakdown look like for you? Even though it's very initial, it's very, you know, faint, you know within yourself what it feels like. And I think that's really important for each person to know themselves and be able to say, okay, your mindset is going in this direction, and usually when you turn this corner, this is what happens next. So what does a breakdown look like
just
for you?
Just to be exhausted with the moment, to be fed up with having to prove yourself, to, you know, just, I guess when I was younger, I did have those words. Why me? Why did this happen to me? I was only 2 years old. What could I have possibly done to deserve this? And, you know, as when I'm younger, those are the thought processes that I would have. You know, why do I have to live like this? But as I grow older and as I grew older, I realized the actual gift behind it, because my sister didn't survive it. I did. God gave me a remarkable strength. So my why me turned from the negative to, wow, an overwhelming why me. Why did you choose me to give this remarkable gift? Because it is so evident when I'm designing that it has to come from God, because here I am with no fingers on one hand and partial fingers on the other, and yet I'm thriving in industry, and yet I'm going to school with the other kids where they said I couldn't go. I was named most athletic in high school. I'm doing all these things that were not supposed to be possible for me.
Amazing, amazing grace is what we started the show off with, and you're just proving God's grace all over your life. Now, let's get into the fashion world a little bit here, because, you know, those of us on the outside, we know the fashion world is being wonderful and glamorous and glitzy and media and all of that wonderful stuff. I spent some early years doing commercial print modeling, mainly because the fashion world said no. It was very hilarious because I'm 5'7" and a half, and I remember I went into a Ford model agency because at the time, Harry Belafonte's daughter was at Ford,
right,
and she was only 5'7". She was only 5'7", so I thought, yeah, you know, I'm going to go take my portfolio over there. And I walk in and they said, you have to be 5'8". I said, but Shari Belafonte is 7". And she looks at me behind the counter and she goes, you are no Shari Belafonte.
Oh, wow.
It's like, you know, those moments where, you know, you walk into one place and they say you're too light, and you go across the corner and they say you're too dark. And it's like, if you had to depend on your identity from the industry, you definitely would be in a loop doing all kinds of things to adjust yourself. But here you are who you are. And so how, because there's the internal world that no one sees, the who you know, the networking,
right,
being respected. So just talk to us about you even deciding to go into that world. Where did that come about, and how did you start to make your way?
Well, actually, I knew from a very young age that this is what I wanted to do. I didn't really know that it was a job or anything like that. I started making doll clothes when I was 5 years old. So I just always knew when I grow up, I want to make clothes. When I remember really learning what it was watching Mahogany and Diana Ross. And
yeah.
Like, so this is a real job. So that was my turning point of actually having a name to identify what I wanted to do. That's probably around 10 or 11 years old, but I've always known, hey, this is what I'm going to do when I grow up. And I designed and made clothes and all through high school and in college. And so, you know, whenever you run across someone now, they're not surprised. They're like, I knew that you were going to do this, because she was always sketching. So I've always known, you know, hey, this is where I'm going to be. But, you know, I took the corporate route because I went to, you know, college. I majored in fashion merchandising, so I became a buyer. I worked with Belk and Macy's and IBM, Dillard's. But in the back of my mind, I knew, hey, the first opportunity, I'm going to be a designer. And, you know, there was some changes in corporate America, and when the opportunity finally presented itself, I took it, and, hey, the rest is history.
What was that opportunity?
I was working with IBM, and I think it was 2000. They started doing these big restructuring in their company. And so I was actually over a new division, and so they offered me another position. I said, so there's not a severance package? And it was like, well, we assumed you would want to stay with the company. And I was like, no, you know, actually, I think I'll take the severance package. So I took the severance package, started my own company, and here I am.
See, you know, I think therein lies a limitation that some people would have went for, because here you are, you're in a safe job, a good job, and they probably are thinking, you know, we're going to be good to her, you know, maybe where else would she go or what else would she do, but you didn't
right.
look at that perspective. You thought, this is my opportunity, let's go, let's make this make
exactly.
this happen. So here you are, you start this business. Talk to us about when you actually start presenting and going, making your pitches and going before press and media. What were the got
oh,
to realize
gosh.
Your talent?
The beginning
yeah.
stages are definitely, you know, the fashion shows that are, gosh, family reunions and auditoriums. And you have to come up through the ranks of, you know, just getting people to see you, to see what you're capable of doing. And then it just started to get a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And a young lady from Project Runway actually did a designer call once in Little Rock, and I went. And she loved my designs, and she raved over, wow, your workmanship is amazing. And she was the one that eventually introduced me to a producer at New York Fashion Week, and he looked at my stuff, and I presented for the first time in 2010. And since then, I've shown 5 times.
That's absolutely wonderful. My middle daughter attends the new school, which is Parsons, and Parsons does
yes,
the
yes.
fashion. So that's really, I know, the hand of God really moving. And when you
yes.
hear about all things working together for good by you just being consistent and staying true to the talent that he's given you, knowing what to do when the opportunity came, it just really just positions you in a way that no human being really could have planned out. If you had a word
right.
of advice to give to someone who is, whether they're a burn victim, an accident victim, they're not even a victim, a survivor in general, and they're going after a goal that everyone's telling them that they can't do, what would you share with them?
To never, never, all caps, ever allow someone to set limitations on you and on in your capabilities and your gifts. You always have to be able to believe in the person that looks back at you from the mirror, because that is the one person that's going to be there when no one else is around. And if you can't find it within yourself, you're going to be in a lot of trouble, because, like I said, those, even with my mom's not here anymore. If
mm-hmm.
I didn't find that inner strength, then I would be lost if I was solely depending upon my mom to say, hey, get up, you can do it. And it's, she embedded that in me, and now I have it. And not everyone does. Not everyone has that mother or anyone to be there to say, hey, you can do this. So that's why it's so important to be able to give that to yourself. And it's not easy. You're not going to wake up tomorrow and be this strong person. But it's a process of just on a daily basis affirming it and believing in what you have inside you. And I say, God didn't drop that gift in your lap for naught. And if he gives it to you, you have to foster it, and you have to feed it, and you have to fuel it, and you got to believe in it.
Something about being in the presence of God that really
yes.
to fuel you and strengthen you and transforms that marshmallow on the inside to start looking more and more like the strength on the outside. And
yes.
I do believe that many of us, including myself, lack the time to really stay in the presence of the King long enough for him to do that work. We're always running to some person or some event or something to make X happen for us, instead of realizing that it really starts within.
It absolutely does. And that thing that I developed of praying when I went off to school. I still do that. Before any show, anything I do, I still find that quiet space where it's just me and God, and I ask him to give me the strength to do it every single time.
Well, Tamela Mann has a wonderful song called Take Me to the King, and it speaks about just no matter where your broken place is and how you feel, get in the presence of the King and you will find the strength to endure. Take me to the King.
Absolutely.
Take me to the King. I don't have much to bring. My heart is torn in pieces. It's my offering. Take me to the King.
Truth is, I'm tired. Options are few. I'm trying to pray, but where are you? I'm all churched out, hurt and abused. I can't face what's left to do.
Come on.
Truth is, I'm weak. No strength to fight, no tears to cry, even if I try, but still my soul refuses to die. One touch will change my life. Take me to the King. I don't have much to bring. My heart's torn in pieces. It's my offering. Lay me at the throne. Leave me there alone to gaze upon your glory and sing to you. Take me to
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
You know, as I listen to that song, I reflect on the fact that it's not about what you have to bring to the King. It's not about that. Romans 10, 9 and 10 says that if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord, and you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, that you will be saved. And that's all you have to bring to the King. Bring yourself. Bring your heart.
Yes.
Just rest that there. Leave that there and watch him do the transformational work. And when we're talking about transformational, it's not always the exterior. What's most important is what's going on in our heart and our mind, our soul. And that propels the energy into the world, into the outside. Linda, you've given us so much, and we haven't even gotten into your world yet. You're also an author. Talk to us a little bit about your book and some of the things you share in the book. What's the title?
The title of the book is Mocha. I actually wrote that book, a few years ago, but the it's Christian fiction. And it's a coming-of-age story about a young lady that, you know, she's dealing with being separated from her mother and being from the South myself, you know, being shipped down South to live with the grandparent, and just the life that she gets thrown into and the bad choices that she makes. And then it fast forward some years later, and she's in a new life and a new place, and thinking that all of that is left behind, and one phone call forces her to have to go back and face the past and all those horrible mistakes she's made.
Wow. That sounds like a page turner indeed. and, you know, we'll have to have you come back on the show if you'd like another time and just talk about romance and dating and that whole world, because I just wrote a book called Don't Give Up and Win, A Survival Guide to Renewed Virginity, which really is talking about abstinence and celibacy, but not so much from the beginning stages. I think young adults can appreciate it too, but also this book is really targeted to those of us who have been divorced or separated or widowed or just have various challenges that allow periods of abstinence to be a part of our lives. But I am always open and willing to have that discussion with people, whether they're cancer survivors and how it's impacted their marital relationship. But we just don't ever talk about it. We don't ever talk about romance and how it affects the many different areas of our lives. So if you'd love to, I'd love to have you back to kind of delve into that world of dating and life and choices and consequences and all of that.
Oh, yes, I'd love to do that. But I am married to the guy that I met in college. So I've known him since I was 18, and we have two kids. So we
and
all that good stuff. So
that's beautiful because, you know, even there, you know, just the mental blocks that many of us carry that we don't need to. And so that encouragement and a wonderful thing to hear. I know this is a wonderful weekend for you. You're in Atlanta. I believe you're there for the International Fashion Week.
Yes, I am. I'm showcasing tomorrow night at the Millennium Gate my fall-winter 2016 collection. So I'm excited to show it off and see what the people think.
What does it feel like, you know, being at this stage of the game and being up there with, like, top-name designers? I mean, you're there with, you know, the people that we grew up turning the pages of Vogue saying, oh, my gosh, they're so fabulous, and you're actually their peer now. What does that feel like? How do you
It's still very terrifying. I have not got, I don't know if I ever will, and I hope that I don't, where I'm just so comfortable, where it's easy breezy. I'm always nervous about doing it. I'm always nervous about when I create how it's going to be perceived, and, you know, because it is the fashion industry, and as Heidi Klum says, one day you're in and the next day you're out. So, you know, those little things, but regardless, I will always be doing this. I would be designing if no one knew who I was, because it's just that passion that has been in me from, like I said, 5 years old. But to be able to walk into a room and see my name on the platform with Ralph Lauren and Donna Karan, that is one of the most amazing feelings ever. And it doesn't come from a prideful place. It comes from a triumphant place of so many people did not expect me to even be, probably not even be able to feed myself, dress myself. And here I am designing with my hands, where a lot of them don't do that anymore. They hire people to sew for them. And here I am, a walking testimony that this is absolutely nothing but God.
Wow. I have my oldest daughter went to art and design here in New York City, and my middle girl went to fashion industries. The oldest goes by Ellie Sheen. She is just getting started in the design world, and one of her good friends, Jatan Watson, is doing really well. But, you know, I want them to hear this episode. I'm going to make sure that they're pulled into this as young people who are facing challenges, to know that it doesn't really matter how someone looks at you when you walk into the room. It's what you bring with you to the table. And you've done a great job of sharing
with you.
Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Oh, I'm honored. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Where can people connect with you and find out more about what you're doing and see your designs?
Well, my website is Romas, R-O-M-A-S, B as in boy, Y-L-R-T.com. That's Romas by L-R-T.com. And then, of course, social media, Instagram, Linda Rowe Thomas, Facebook, Linda Rowe Thomas. I'm on Twitter, Romas by L-R-T. So I'm out there, social media, so... And it's easy to, I try to keep up with everything and post what I'm doing. So that's a great way to follow the journey, so to speak.
And how do us regular people get a hold of your clothing? Like where are you carried? Are you boutique style? How do you do it?
Well, actually, that's something that I will announce soon, because we're working on that for Atlanta. So people of Atlanta will be able to go into a boutique very soon and shop for some of the pieces. So, but I will announce that in when and where and all the details.
So you guys have heard it here on Don't Give Up Radio. Thank you again, Linda Rowe Thomas, for being our guest and sharing your wonderful story on this special edition. For our listeners, hey, listen, if there's ever a week for me to say this to you, go out this week and be your very own best hero, because the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave his life for you, and that power is now inside of you. And even if you feel like a marshmallow on the inside, you put on that armor and you go forward and know that it's not over. It's not over. God's got something for you. Don't give up.